Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All sorts of new information flowing out of the NFL owners' meetings in Florida this week. And today on the show, I'm going to dive into all of it for you. First, some big rule changes that impact the product on the field in a major way. My thoughts on that and how it may impact the Seahawks' draft plans in a certain specific area. Also, we got to hear from head coach Mike McDonald for the first time in a few weeks, as well as John Schneider. Again, some new updates on injuries to key players and where they stand on the roster. Spoiler alert, they aren't done adding veteran free agents. I'll throw a couple of possible names at you. Rumors galore, including one about the Seahawks' continued interest in one of the top QBs in the draft that just won't die. We'll dissect that one as well. And I'll wrap it up with a special bonus owners meeting mock draft incorporating everything that we're learning and everything we're going to talk about today. With a twist. News, notes, rumors, lots coming up today on Seahawks Forever.
Welcome to the Seahawks Forever podcast. In-depth analysis on everything Seahawks. And now, here's your host, Dan Vians.
Thanks for joining me again, everybody. If you haven't watched yesterday's show, please do. Really had a good time talking with Keith Simons, who spent 36 years as a college football coach, offensive coordinator. He was an air raid guy, kind of a Mike Leach disciple. Went on after that for a while to run his own quarterback academy and tutor quarterbacks privately. And he had some really cool insight into everything from some of the top prospects in the draft at that position, the Seahawks' current quarterback situation, some great stories about the past. We talk about Jim Zorn. We talk about Cooper Helfitt, the former Duke tight end who he actually coached in junior college. Really good time. I'll tag that up here for you. Definitely check that one out. In the meantime, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Hit that bell button for notification of new episodes. Like the video. It helps in the algorithm. Helps things grow. And then if you prefer audio podcasts and you want to listen without ads, you can do that on Spotify. It's less than $1 a month to subscribe to that. Or you can just support me in the show by buying me a coffee or a beer or whatever you want to classify it as. Those links will be down below in the description. As I said, ton of information coming out of Orlando, Florida the last couple of days. And usually the owners' meetings are kind of a dud. You know, free agency has died down. And I think the reason it's been so quiet for Seahawks news the last couple of years is because it's been status quo. But with all the changes, new head coach, new coaching staff, new players, you know, kind of an invigorated John Schneider out there just going, you know, with guns out, just trying to put together the best roster that he can. It seems like there's more going on than normal. We're not just hearing the same messaging over and over again. I thought I would dive into some of that today. Let's start here. We got to hear from Mike McDonald again for the first time and for the first time in weeks anyway. And it was kind of cool to talk, to listen to him this time because, you know, earlier he hadn't even had a staff put together the last time we really heard from him. And then the staff stayed back in Renton at the VMAC, getting to know each other, putting together a playbook, putting together the off-season program, which begins on April 8th, I believe, while Schneider and the scouts and some of the guys from the front office went to the combine. The coaching staff stayed behind. So they sort of, you know, locked themselves in a bunker and put together a program. And now we get to hear about that with a little bit more clarity. And I thought one of the things that really stood out to me from McDonald's comments were how he wants to build the defense up the middle. And Schneider reiterated that when he had his meeting with the media as well. Interior defensive line, linebackers, safety. And he even name dropped, you know, he talked about how that was so important to bring Leonard Williams and Jonathan Hankins back, give him some size and beef up front, along with, you know, Jaren Reed and Cameron Young, last year's fourth round pick, and some of the other young guys. Adding Terrell Dodson and Jerome Baker as the inside linebackers, guys that they feel like are very physical, play the run well, take on blocks well. But also, and we've heard this a couple of times over the last couple of weeks, just how smart those players are. And you saw some comments, if you've been paying attention to the owners' meetings, Mike McDaniel's from Miami, who obviously Jerome Baker played for the last 2 years, just went on at length about what a beloved player Jerome Baker was in that locker room, what a leader he was, but also how smart he was. We've heard similar things about Terrell Dodson. And, you know, one of the theories that I've heard that makes a lot of sense is that they targeted a specific type of, let's say, cerebral player because we're going through a scheme change. And they wanted to bring in guys who have a track record of picking things up quickly. Jerome Baker had to learn 3 different defensive systems during his time in Miami and yet wore the green dot during most of that. Terrell Dodson, even though he was a first-time starter essentially last year, John Schneider says he's a green dot guy. McDonald went on to say that they're not even sure who's going to wear the green dot, which is the guy who's got the headset and gets to communicate with the sidelines. That McDonald talked about some really interesting things that in Baltimore, it wasn't always just Roquan Smith after he was acquired by default. It was Chuck Clark at one time, safety. It was Eric Weddle when he came over for a brief time after a long career with the Chargers, wore the green dot. It's all about, you know, who's going to be on the field the most and communication styles. McDonald talked about how some of those guys want different information and can disseminate it differently and communicate it differently. And so they're not even sure. It could be a safety. Maybe it's Jordan Love or Julian Love. Sorry, we're not going to have the Green Bay Packers quarterback calling our defensive signals, I wouldn't think. But I thought that those were interesting comments in that their actions have backed up their words, that they say they want to do that and they've gone out and done it. Where have they added the most in free agency, either by re-signing their own players or signing from the outside? Interior defensive line, inside linebacker, safety. You know, bringing in Rayshon Jenkins, having Julian Love there, bringing in Kayvon Wallace to bolster that safety group. We'll see how Kobe Bryant fits into that. Jonathan Sutherland, perhaps. Schneider said that Jarek Reed, the seventh round safety, the rookie from last year, who showed flashes, hurt his ACL late in the year, that his progress is looking good. They expect him to be ready at some point the first half of the season. You know, last year, around this time, really, or as soon as the offseason began, we heard there was that interview that Pete Carroll did where he talked about how much they want to emulate what they've seen the San Francisco 49ers do on their defensive line. Longer, bigger, more physical, deeper. They can rotate guys. And then they never went out and really executed that in the offseason to where we were all, you know, worried going into the draft that they need to actually get impact there. And they didn't really. Cameron Young didn't produce much as a rookie, and Mike Morris was hurt, missed his entire rookie season, which ultimately led to them making the move to get Leonard Williams at the deadline. So we've seen, you know, we're starting to see now kind of the pieces being put in place for the type of team they want to build. And what's encouraging to me and should be to you, I would think, is that we are seeing the words and actions match. Mike McDonald has talked, and he mentioned it again this week. He used the term run wall. He wants to set up a run wall on defense. He wants to be impenetrable. He wants to be able to just absolutely take the run away from teams. And we'll see how that continues in the draft too. We're going to talk about that in just a little bit. And then I think, you know, the biggest question on most people's minds is, okay, we've talked about also being able to establish an identity on the offensive side of the ball, run the football, be physical, establish the run, maintain it throughout a game, run when teams are expecting you to run, being able to impose your will at times. But how are we going to do that with a first-time, second-year starter in Olu Oluwatimi, presumably at center, although Mike McDonald did say that Nick Harris, who was acquired from the Cleveland Browns, would compete with Oluwatimi, but I expect Olu to win the job. And then all the questions about guards, right? With Damian Lewis departing in free agency, they signed Tremaine Antrim, a career backup, his first 4 years in the league from the Rams last week, although McDonald did say today that he expects him to compete for a starting job. He name dropped McClendon Curtis, who the Seahawks, I've talked about him before, poached off the Raiders practice squad last year at the beginning of the year, and they carried him on the roster the entire season. They liked him that much. So he name dropped those two guys as being able to compete for the guard positions. Interestingly enough, didn't really talk much about Anthony Bradford. So we'll see where he figures into that situation. But then he said, and I thought this was maybe one of the key things that he said, for those of you worried about, A, do we have any money left? Can we still sign any veterans? And B, what are we going to do about offensive line? Because a lot of you got nervous when Schneider made his comments a couple weeks ago that he felt offensive guards in particular were overdrafted at times and overpaid in free agency. I think some of you took that to mean he thinks guards are overrated or that they shouldn't be paid. That's a place where you can save money. I didn't take him that way at all. I took it more as frustration that maybe there are some times in the draft he's had guys picked right in front of him. Or maybe there was some interest in certain guards in free agency and they just ended up going for more than they expected to pay. You know, you really have to parse his comments sometimes. He talked about it again this week on his coach's show or on his show on ESPN 710 that, you know, guys just sometimes, he didn't use the term overpaid, but just that they get paid more money than they were willing to pay, that they assign a value to guys. And he thinks that, you know, guards have exceeded that value for the most part. I never took those comments to mean he doesn't value the position. And indeed, Mike McDonald said, and the quote is, we aren't done adding at the guard position, quote, by any stretch of the imagination, end quote, that we're not done adding. Brady Henderson of ESPN said he expects the Seahawks to sign a veteran guard sometime in the next week or two. And this jibes with what Schneider said on Thursday as well. And I didn't think this comment got as much traction as I expected it to or think it should have, that after the owners' meetings, we have some more guys coming in for meetings. We have some more free agents coming in for meetings. And if your question then is, well, Dan, how can they afford to sign anybody other than maybe a vet minimum guy? I think over the cap today shows them at just over $4 million in effective cap space, which means after their draft picks are signed. That's not much, but it's also quite a bit in some ways. Remember last year, I'll keep reminding you this, that the Seahawks continued to make adjustments in other players' contracts right up until and actually into the first week of training camp last year in order to get Devin Witherspoon signed. And so they have a couple levers they can still pull on other players' contracts. They must know that they can or are going to do that, or maybe have already and it hasn't been publicized. And remember, a lot of these contracts are written in such a way they don't have to get the player's permission, just like the Geno Smith situation. There are clauses in some of these contracts that just allow them to convert things and free up a little cap space if they need to. So who might he be talking about? There's still some interesting veterans out on the free agent market. And one name that I know a lot of people tend to lean on first is Dalton Risner, played for the Lions last year on that outstanding offensive line, former high draft pick, because he's on the right side of 30. I think he's 28, 29 years old now. I don't know what it is about him. Maybe it's the fact that he's known as a good run blocker, struggles a little bit in pass protection at times because he was a late signing last year in the offseason as well, signed a one-year deal with the Lions. But I think there's still a couple value out there. And there's two names in particular that stick out to me that I thought I would throw at you. One is Laken Tomlinson, first round draft pick of the Lions in 2015. He is 32 years old now. Played for the 49ers, played for the Lions, then the 49ers, and the Jets last year. Had his best years with the 49ers. Was the eighth highest graded guard in the league in 2020, according to PFF. Made the Pro Bowl in 2021. Really struggled in PFF's grading system last year with the Jets, especially in run blocking. Overall, he was rated the 53rd highest graded guard out of 79. And his lowest score was in run blocking. Is that a declining player, or was that just a dysfunctional offense all the way around with the Jets last year? And, you know, because sometimes those individual player grades on PFF, it's one of the reasons they're so polarizing, are affected by other factors. There's context that the grade misses at times. But he could be a guy. And then another one is a familiar name. Same age, same draft year, fourth round pick in 2015 by your Seattle Seahawks, Mark Glowinski. Remember him? Had that one good year and then was released and picked up by the Colts. Had a couple of great years with them. Played for the Giants last year. Similar situation to Laken Tomlinson, where he had a one-year deal. Although his grading turned out much better. He was rated as the 25th best guard overall. But the Giants needed to clear some salary cap space, decided to move on from him. He was 16th best, according to PFF, against the run last year for the Giants. Again, still just 32 years old. And the thing that appeals to me about those two players, and I would imagine that at least one of them is among the list of these players that are coming in to interview or meet with the Seahawks, is they're both considered street free agents. They were both released before the start of the league year by their former teams, which means they do not count towards the compensatory draft pick formula, which I think for the first time in many years means something to John Schneider and the Seahawks. I believe right now they still have the maximum of four that all the contract numbers have come out now of some of the late signings they had last week, and Kayvon Wallace, Tremaine Antrim, those guys were veteran minimum signings. And even the Jonathan Hankins deal came in at, you know, about $2.5 million average annual value, I think. I don't believe either one of those deals is enough to knock out one of the comp picks they have. And so it appears that they would still have the max of four, which I think means something to them heading into next year. I think they want to be able to attack day three again and also have those extra picks if they want to move around the board a little bit, maybe get aggressive and move up, especially if next year the quarterback position is in play in the draft. So those were some of the biggest takeaways, I think, from Mike McDonald's comments. And I think, assuming then that Brady Henderson is right and that they do sign a veteran guard that we all feel pretty good about, that all of a sudden you start to look at this roster, like I talked about last week, that I think the overall roster is better than it was a year ago. And now more and more each day with each one of these signings, we can look ahead to the draft and see that, okay, now everything John Schneider talks about, best player available, that he can let the draft come to him. And that those glaring needs we all thought we had 3 or 4 weeks ago that we were focusing on intently anytime we would do a mock draft might not be the biggest needs anymore, right? Now, Schneider did talk a little bit more in detail last week about his grading system and that positional need is incorporated in the grade. But that when you talk about those foundational philosophies now that we're starting to hear over and over again from McDonald and Schneider, physical run game, run wall up front, strong defense up the middle. And he also mentioned lockdown corners as well. So what are the premium positions that typically get focused on and drafted high? Defensive line, cornerback, receiver, in addition to quarterback, obviously. And the positions that have been devalued a little bit over the last couple of years because teams have found that they can get them later on in the draft and develop those players. And we've seen this devaluation of these particular positions in both the draft and free agency. Interior offensive line, although let's take the free agency piece out of that. That's blown up a little bit. But linebacker and safety also. And the Seahawks themselves obviously have made that major correction, that shift this offseason, moving on from Quandre Diggs, Jamal Adams, taking those savings and spreading it around the defense. That the combined cap hits of their three starting safeties this year are less than what they're saving in the Diggs and Adams deal. They've righted that wrong, at least for now. And I think it's important to look at this because as we look ahead to the draft and we all think we know what we want them to do and we all think that we know what they need to do, be prepared to be surprised. That if they're truly trying to take best player available and target and add as many potential blue chip players to this roster as possible to put Mike McDonald in the best position to succeed, that it shouldn't matter. Here's an example. I think fans, for the most part, would think we're set at corner. Devin Witherspoon, Reek Woolen, right? Plus depth, Trey Brown, Mike Jackson. It may not be that simple. This is an incredibly strong cornerback class. As shocked as some of you were that they took a corner last year at five, because what was the thing about the Seahawks up until this point? They never take corners high. Well, there's a new sheriff in town. There's a new philosophy. And if they look up at their board and they're sitting at 16, they can't find a trade back, or they do trade back, let's say to 25 with Green Bay, and they look up at their board and the best player there is a guy that they have rated at the top of their board and he's a corner, whoever that might be, don't be surprised if they take him. Maybe Mike McDonald isn't sold on Reek Woolen and his lack of physicality that he struggled with a little bit last year. Maybe he does plan to play Devin Witherspoon more in the slot, although I would push back against that. I have some feelings about that. I'll do a whole other show on. And so he may think, hey, that's the best guy on our board. That's a guy I want in the program. He fits everything we're looking for. Let's get him in here and let it work itself out. There's always demand for corners. You can always trade a guy if you think you have a logjam there. And the other one that I think some of you need to get prepared for is at some point, I've been thinking this for weeks, but at some point in this draft, the Seahawks are going to take a wide receiver. Be prepared for it. And if I had a dollar for every fan who's told me they don't need receivers, they're set there, I could take my lady and go to a tropical beach for a couple of weeks, take some time off. First of all, the NFL roster is never set at any position. Unless, I suppose, if you have a franchise quarterback in his 20s. But certainly not a wide receiver. Certainly not when you have two guys in your wide receiver room that have massive cap hits. And one of those guys is coming up on the last year of his deal next year. And the other one is on the wrong side of 30. You have to always add talent, stack talent, and plan for the future. Plus, you have a new offensive coordinator. He may have a different type. He may look at this wide receiver room and think, they really don't have a certain type of player. I think it makes sense that they're looking at a guy like Malachi Corley from Western Kentucky, there's been some Debo Samuel comps. He turns into a running back with the ball in his hands. You know, I don't know if we have that guy on the roster right now. D. Eskridge is the closest thing to it. They reworked his deal. So there's really no risk for the team. If they cut him, if he doesn't make the team, they don't take a big cap hit. He basically gave up a bunch of guaranteed money. But that's probably the one guy on the roster that Ryan Grubb might look at and say, okay, I can do some things with him that are different than what I can do with DK, even JSN, Tyler, Bobo. Those are all different guys.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
And we're going to talk about the rule changes and how that might work into it as well. But just be prepared for that, because I think it's, again, two of the strongest draft classes or position groups in this draft class are receiver and corner. There's going to be a massive run on them. Again, it is quite likely the Seahawks are going to look up at their board whenever the first round pick comes around and they have a wide receiver up there. So just plan for that. I think the two other things before we get into the rule changes that I think are outstanding news, we've got some injury updates. Uchenna Nwosu is expected to be ready for the beginning of the season. I don't think any of us really doubted that. But we finally got a definitive statement about Abe Lucas, and John Schneider said he expects him to be ready to go week one. If that's true, if they're able to ramp him up and get him going, and if he's anywhere close to 100%, they've got that thing fixed where it's not going to be chronic. Massive, massive news, especially given that they signed George Fant, just a really, really outstanding, you know, veteran guy that can play left or right tackle. Even though I thought Stone Forsythe did okay last year, and obviously he's much younger than Fant. Again, I think all these moves we're starting to see, if you haven't doubted it up until this point, this organization isn't interested in any kind of a rebuild, and they want to win while they're adapting to their new coach. The big news coming out of the owners' meetings league-wise are some of these rule changes. A lot of times there are rule tweaks, but there are two that came out of this one that I think are pretty significant. There was a smaller one too about how they've kind of expanded the third quarterback rule, that now you can elevate a guy as your third emergency quarterback every week without, it's unlimited now, which I think is something that needed to happen. But the two big ones are the change in the kickoff and the elimination of the hip drop tackle. And this was one that's been debated. There were some major injuries last year. Was it Mark Edwards that broke his leg or his ankle in that one? Geno Smith, you know, it was a hip drop tackle that injured him last year. And it was a unanimous vote by the league to ban it. And here's the thing. Here's what concerns me the most. First of all, I'm all for trying to clean up and get something out of the game that has contributed to some significant injuries. And there are similarities. When you watch some of these highlights of the hits on these guys that are causing these injuries, they do look familiar. So they need to figure out a way, as much as they can, to legislate that out of the game. Certainly it is concerning. You know, it's just yet another rule that makes a defensive player have to process more as he goes to tackle a guy, which I think could continue leading to even more poor tackling and sloppy tackling, which is only going to help offenses, right? What worries me about this, and the league tried to soften the blow last week by saying that we hope that they were going to try not to over-legislate this on game days and handle it more, unless there was a severe example of it, handle it more with fines after the fact than penalties during the game. The thing about that is, do any of us really have confidence in the NFL that they are going to do the right thing when it comes to how they officiate a rule? I mean, we all remember the pass interference and what a debacle that was when they tried to review it for a year and then decided to scrap it because they couldn't do it right. That continues, I think, to be sort of a black eye in the league. And we continue to see week in and week out pass interference calls that either are or aren't called that seem like they could be reviewable and corrected and gotten right. That's my concern with this one. Games will be decided on a hip drop tackle, and they decided it won't be reviewable. That's the part of this I don't like and that I don't really understand. Ban the tackle, try to define it as best you can, call it if it happens on the field, but make it reviewable. If a blow to the head or targeting, which I think is much more subjective and much harder to define in real time, if that's reviewable, but the hip drop tackle isn't, that part I don't understand. You have all this technology, all these millions of dollars wrapped up in this review system. I know you're concerned about the length of games and stoppages, but let's get it right. Hopefully, we'll see it handled as best as possible this year. And if there are any egregious issues or examples of it being poorly called, that maybe they can go back and sort of revisit the idea next offseason to have it reviewed. The kickoff rule, I love. This is, straight out of the XFL, and the USFL, I think, did this as well. Where, I even said last year, I think I said it on the show, I know I tweeted it a bunch of times, let's just get rid of the kickoff and just have each team start after a score or at the beginning of each half at the 25-yard line, because they had placed so many limitations on the kickoff trying to make it safer that all these kickers were doing is knocking it out of the back of the end zone. It takes the return out of the game. It just makes it a wasted play, to be honest. And so this one, and I'm not going to try to explain all the details of it to you. There's a video, if you look it up online, that the league produced. It's kind of animated and it has all the bullet points. It's really well done. But basically, the kickoff team lines up closer to the return team, and quite a bit ahead, quite a few yards ahead of the kicker. And the kicker has to aim for a space between, it's called the landing zone, I believe it's between the goal line and the 25-yard line. If the ball is kicked in that landing zone, the ball has to be returned. You can't fair catch it. And what it does by moving the kickoff team closer to the receiving team is it cuts down on full speed collisions. But I think it almost creates an offensive play for the return team, where now it's another element that teams have to practice and prepare for, because you're basically figuring out blocking schemes. I do think it'll bring the kick returner and the kick return as a play back into the game, which again is something that we haven't seen. It hasn't impacted games much lately. And I think when you look at the Seahawks roster, it's kind of something outside again of maybe Eskridge that they lack, is a guy that can be dynamic in the kick return game, because they haven't needed to prioritize that. They would rather take that one of 53 roster spot and give it to a guy who has a more specialized role. So I love that one. Not super excited about the way that they're deciding to administer the hip drop tackle. Love the kickoff rule. I think that's some good stuff. As always, there are rumors coming out of the owners' meetings. A couple of that I think apply to the Seahawks that are very, very interesting. One is that they have met with Braden Fisk, defensive lineman out of Florida State. He's a guy that you hear me talk about him around the Senior Bowl, was just one of my first draft crushes of this offseason because of the intensity he plays with, just the fire that he plays with, how quick he is off the ball. And then he goes to the Senior Bowl and he dominates in the Senior Bowl. And then he's willing to switch teams the morning of the game because they were shorthanded, and he agrees to do it. And he's one of the best players in the game. I think he should have won MVP instead of Spencer Rattler, who had one good drive, a couple of screen passes and a decent touchdown ball and gets MVP. Fisk was dominant the whole time that he played. And then he went to the combine and was just an athletic freak at his size. But I thought he might not be in the Seahawks plans, A, because he kind of looks like a second rounder. We don't have a second round pick. And B, the short arm thing. I think he has sub 32 inch arms. But when I was watching, I was listening to the podcast, Move the Sticks with Bucky and Daniel Jeremiah. And he was talking about how the arm length doesn't seem to impact Fisk's game because he's so quick to get off the ball, that he gets up into the offensive lineman before he can get his hands locked on. He's a versatile guy, can play down on all fours, can play on the edge. Love the fact that he may be in play if the draft falls a certain way, and that maybe a new coaching staff, a little bit different philosophy, maybe some of those physical specs aren't a deal breaker like they used to be. And you'll see that in my bonus mock draft coming up here in just a minute. The other thing is that Albert Breer reporting the Seahawks met extensively at Michigan's Pro Day, once again, with J.J. McCarthy. We know that they met with him at the Combine, and now here they are meeting again at the same time that he seems to be shooting up draft boards, as his old college coach Jim Harbaugh said he would. Harbaugh actually predicted he'd be the first pick in the draft. I think that what the Bears have done this offseason, if they don't take Caleb Williams now, they might burn that city down. I think he's locked in at one. But now there's rumors that the Commanders may be leaning J.J. McCarthy at two over Jane Daniels and Drake May. Obviously, there's a connection there. Mike McDonald's familiar with J.J. McCarthy because he was a defensive coordinator there at Michigan. McCarthy's freshman year. Obviously, Jay Harbaugh, who coached there, is going to be familiar with him. And then Jim and the connection, everything else. And I think he embodies everything that John Schneider looks for in a quarterback. It's a guy that I've liked for a couple of months. Some of you and I may have debated about him recently. Keith Simons had some cool thoughts on him yesterday as well. Another reason to check out that episode. I find it interesting, but I also think it's kind of a whole lot of nothing. I think they're doing due diligence because they love the player. But at the end of the day, I don't think there's any chance that they can go up and get him because they don't have the ammo. At least they don't have more ammo than the other teams who would be interested in moving up to get him or one of the other quarterbacks. And so, look, if they make it happen, if they feel like that's the best move for the franchise and that's the guy they need moving forward, okay, we'll deal with that then. I just don't think, I wouldn't make too much of that other than they really like the guy. They've seen quarterbacks fall in the past. They want to be ready. Also, and this, you know, this can be, is take from this what you will. There are so many players on that Michigan team that would be fits in Seattle. They had 18 guys at the combine, right? An all-time record. That it's commonplace for these teams to ask a player about other players and who would know better about some of these other guys than one of the leaders on the team. And so they may be kind of picking JJ's brain also about some of these other players. And then Mike McDonald talked some more about Sam Howell. And some of the thought process that went into acquiring him from the Commanders. And I thought this was really fascinating that, because I didn't know this, but during the preseason last year, the Ravens and Commanders had one of those two-day joint practice sessions prior to their meeting in week two of the preseason last year. And so Coach McDonald got a chance to see Sam Howell in a unique environment, up close, in extended form, in a practice environment where, you know, it's a little bit more, it's a little less refined, right? You get to see a little bit more different sides of a player. Players might take more chances in practice. You get to see his demeanor. You get to see his competitiveness and how he interacts with his teammates differently than you do on game day. And then they played each other in that week two game, which now week two is what week three used to be. That is the game where they play the veterans the most, they game plan the most. And so he got to see him up close, go 19 out of 25 for 188 yards, two touchdowns, a 123.4 passer rating. So he got to watch him for 2 days in practice, got to game plan for him and prepare him after seeing what he can do and can't do in practice. And then Howell went out and played well against them that week. I thought that was really interesting. Coming from a defensive guy, you know, in judging a quarterback. So based on all those things that we've heard, it starts to, for me, kind of bring some clarity, potentially, to the draft process. And so I thought, you know what? What the heck? Let me throw together a mock draft here and see if I can incorporate some of these ideas. And this is what I came up with. And again, prepare to be surprised. You know they're going to do something at some point in this draft that seems counterintuitive, right? They're not just going to go into this draft and do nothing but draft linebackers and guards. They're not going to do that. And so whatever position you don't think they need, prepare for them to take it. Because at some point in this draft, that guy might be at the top of their board. Here's what I came up with. I made that trade down again with the Green Bay Packers down to 25. So that picks up a second. And that's almost an even match on the trade chart. So you move down from 16 to 25 and you pick up 26. Green Bay has a lot of extra picks. They have the youngest roster in the draft. I think they're going to be hunting impact more than volume this year. And so there's a couple of opportunities in this draft to trade down with them. There's another one in the third round where they have a couple of picks right behind us as well. And then I went with Byron Murphy, who you've heard me talk about on the show. I don't think he's there at 25, but he could be. And here's why. And I touched on this earlier, because there is going to be a run on offensive tackles. There's going to be a run on these corners. There's going to be a run on these wide receivers. And that all starts after the run on quarterbacks, which may go 1 through 4. And so you start plugging those guys in, and those are premium positions, franchise building block positions that are going to push some of these guys down. And so maybe a defensive tackle who some teams might think is slightly undersized at just over 6 foot and 302, but he's got those long arms, 34 and a half inches, plays a lot bigger than he is. I think he's a guy that Seattle's going to absolutely love. Just the athleticism, the versatility to move around the line, the way he stacks up against double teams, can play the run, but also has a little bit of juice getting to the passer. If a guy like that's there at 25, I like him better than Johnny Newton. He's longer. I think they run to the podium and take Byron Murphy. And then they continue, you know, to prioritize what McDonald talked about with that run wall and being stout up front. And then in the second round, this would be one of those that I defined as a surprise to most of you. Mike Sainer still, cornerback, Michigan, smaller guy, right? So you might think, well, he doesn't really fit the traditional Seahawk cornerback specs. Those might be out the window. Thing about Sainer still is this. He's versatile. He can play outside, but he would mostly, for me, project as a slot guy for two reasons. Number one, as I touched on earlier, I think when Mike McDonald, and he talked about it just a couple of days ago, wants lockdown corners, as much as he likes the idea of what Devin Witherspoon can do in the slot, saw what he did last year when he watches the tape, the chance to put him on the outside and just lock down half the field, I think is intriguing. And I think he might prefer that. And a guy like Sainer still, who has tremendous short area quickness, plays bigger than his size, again, not afraid to get physical, but also the things that you hear about his intangibles and his leadership is the way I've heard it. I think it was, again, Daniel Jeremiah was saying, when you ask all the other players on that Michigan team who the alpha dog was, the alpha of the alphas, and that whole roster was loaded with leaders, right? They talk about Chris Jenkins this way and JJ McCarthy this way as well. They said the one guy that stands out the most to a man, they said Mike Sainer still. Like, he's that guy. He's a program and culture setter, but also a guy that can really help you out in the slot and allow Devin Witherspoon to move outside. So I like the idea of that, and I could see it happening. In the third round, Cole Bishop, another safety who continues to show through the draft process how dynamic and athletic he is, because there were some things in that Utah scheme he wasn't asked to do that some draft analysts might have thought he can't do, but now he's showing them. Had an outstanding pro day the other day. I think he's got the right blend of size and speed to be one of these players that McDonald talks about and has had success before, where they're interchangeable. I don't think you're ever going to see under him anyway, you know, that the old Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor duo, the big, strong, physical, strong safety that plays in the box, and then the free safety that plays center field. John Schneider said they're going to play more two deep. I think Bishop is a guy that could play the slot on tight ends, play free, play strong. Really, really like him. And then they miss out on Malachi Corley, who I think is a legit target. But he was even gone by 226. But I think Jalen McMillan is another guy. There's obviously the connection there with Ryan Grubb. I think of those three receivers coming out of there, with Adunze certainly is going to be a top 10 pick, and then Polk. McMillan, because of the injuries and the injury history, has been dropped down on some draft boards. But he's a guy that's super versatile, can play the slot, can play outside. Good run after the catch, outstanding hands, excellent route runner, good size. I think he's a little bit different than what they have. Maybe built of the receivers we have, built more like JSN. I think he's a little bit shiftier and maybe a little bit more explosive. And then you finally address linebacker Jalen Ford, a guy that is a true Mike. Really, he's one of the bigger linebackers in this class, and a guy that I think is a real fit and wouldn't have to play right away. So he gets a chance to learn from Dodson, Baker, and then work that linebacker out, that room out moving forward. But man, I want to get some guys on 4-year rookie contracts coming out of this draft. I really, really do. And then you drop down, you don't pick again until the 6th round. You got to address offensive line. Thing I like about Brandon Coleman, he played left tackle at TCU. He was their best offensive lineman, outstanding athletic numbers, projects to move inside, did so at the Senior Bowl and looked great doing it. Remember what Snyder said the other day? He said, we go best player available until like the 5th, 6th, 7th round, and then we go based on need. And we've also seen them in those later rounds go with guys that stand out at the Senior Bowl because of their relationship with Jim Nagy. They love those Senior Bowl guys. I think Brandon Coleman is a guy that could play tackle in a pinch, has that versatility, but could really excel as guard and a guy to develop between what they have now. Jordan Jefferson, I think, is great value in the 6th round. Just the production hasn't quite been there. Certainly the traits are. He is a unique dude. There have been Eric Armstead comps just because of his length and size. I address the linebacker again at 6'16", Maris Leifo, a guy that I like more than most of the linebackers in this class because he plays so hard and the motor, and he plays moving forward and he's not afraid to hit, take on blocks. Maybe he's a little over-aggressive at times, but the athletic profile's there. Love the way he plays. And then, you know, moving forward, you might have a guy in Ford who's more of a Mike, a guy in Leifo who's more of a Will, but can also kind of come off the edge too, get after the quarterback a little bit. And then the 7th round, I look for guys that the Seahawks have met with and shown interest in. Grayson Murphy, they've set up a top 30 meeting with him, one of the identical twins from UCLA. A little bigger edge prospect, not super twitchy. And then I think at some point they're going to take a quarterback. I usually take one in the 7th round. I usually take Devin Leary if he's there. I think he's the most pro-ready of that group of quarterbacks that late in the draft. But because the Seahawks are meeting with him, I went with John Reese Plumlee. Really interesting, super fast, shifty, kind of a scrambler, quick release. Looked really good in the Shrine game out of UCF. How do you feel about that? That's my owner's meeting bonus mock draft. As always, love your opinions on my mocks. Tell me what you think of those choices. That'll do it for today. Get you all caught up. Coming up, what do we have coming up on the show? Tomorrow, Clinton Bonner of the Seahawkers podcast will rejoin me again, get his take on what's going on in the offseason and some of his favorite guys coming up in the draft, what he'd like to see the Seahawks do. And then all sorts of stuff on tap for next week. Got rescheduled with Jackson Bevins of Cigar Thoughts. He and I are going to touch base on Tuesday. Always great to talk to him. And then we're going to dive deep into the draft. Shane Hallam of Draft Countdown, Emery Hunt, those guys are going to be joining me over the next couple of weeks. Brett Coleman has promised that he'll make an appearance before the draft as well. Some of my favorite guys to follow, read their draft guides, and in Brett's case, watch his YouTube content. So lots to look forward to. And the best way to make sure that you don't miss any of that is hit that bell on YouTube. Subscribe so you get notifications on the audio side as well. And follow me on Twitter. That's where I let you know about all of it, at Seahawks Forever. Thanks again for watching and listening and supporting the program. Until next time, I am Dan. Forever and always, go Hawks.